Hi, I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. I'm here today with Roger Grimes, data-driven defense evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about KnowBefore, visit KnowBefore.com. Roger, welcome. Great to have you back with us.
Glad to be here.
So, Roger, it's that time of year. The FBI Internet Crime Report just came out for 2020. Anyone who wants to read it can go to ic3.gov. It's right on the homepage. The first thing that jumped out at me, Roger, I read through this report twice, were the COVID-19 scam statistics. And it wasn't just the sheer numbers, which are big, but, you know, cyber criminals will really stoop that low and try to monetize a pandemic when millions of people are dying?
Yeah, I mean, imagine that, criminals being unethical. But, you know, what's interesting is at the beginning of this, we had some ransomware group saying, we promise we're not going to take advantage of it. We're not going to attack hospitals or labs. That lasted about 2 weeks. And then it seems as if ever since then, they're just literally focusing on it. They're focusing on attacking hospitals, focusing on attacking labs, focusing on attacking people with the COVID thing, because, you know, ultimately they're just greedy and unethical and whatever they can do to make people pay the soonest. And, you know, so maybe there was the best intentions at the start, but then they saw that people were taking advantage of it, were getting a lot more success. And there's so many topics with COVID, right? It's COVID paychecks, COVID announcements, COVID vaccinations, COVID this. And on top of that, what we've also seen is a whole lot of like HR-related phishing. So it may or may not be related to COVID, but everybody's, you know, working from home, or a lot of people working from home. And so there's a lot of, a lot of updates in people's lives. So, and people are getting new software and new VPNs, and all of that, change is being used to confuse people to get them to click on links.
Right. Well, it's got to be a real challenge for companies to react so quickly. I mean, the number of complaints into IC3 this year for COVID-19 scams was on par with what they saw for tech support scams, which have been around for years. So the thought that, you know, they had a rush of that many complaints, how do companies react to that, you know, train all of their people? There's so many different types of scams around COVID.
Yeah, you know, certainly our customers, us and our customers and competitors, we all certainly ramped up the COVID phishing training, be on the alert. We published, you know, dozens and dozens of examples, you know, like early on, it was these fake COVID heat maps and fake, hey, here's who's infected in your company or infected in your neighborhood. So, you know, we tried to respond. It is true that we're always being reactive. The attackers can change on a dime and come up with new things. But, you know, we're getting better at being faster and more responsive. You know, let me just say overall about the FBI report, I love the report and I love reading it every year, but I'm always amazed by, like, think about, have you ever reported any phishing attack against you to the FBI? Like, I don't know anyone that ever does it. So the number of reports to the FBI have gone up, and they're in the tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands to millions, depending on what stat they're giving you. I'm thinking, wow, those are only the people that cared enough to report it. And I don't know if you've ever tried to report it. You go to the website, and it's not the most easy user-friendly thing to do. They've made it better, I guess, through the website, but it's still like all of these clicks and it's kind of strange and you're putting information through. And here's the kicker. There's no benefit other than data collection. It's not like the FBI is going to get your report going, I'm going after that hacker. So
right.
You really don't have any incentive to call them and report it, you know, but people are and people do. So that's what's amazing to me is that it's truly the tip of the iceberg, because most people aren't going to the FBI to report these common everyday types of attacks. So when you see the stats kick up so significantly, you got to think that the real pressure is many, many times worse.
Well, that's a great point, Roger. I mean, I'd put that figure at minimum, you know, 20x. People don't even know that the FBI is the lead law enforcement agency, let alone, you know, the IC3 exists. But sticking with their numbers, just because, you know, there's definitely something to them. Call me naive, but, you know, tracking this space, watching companies like KnowBefore, who does an amazing job, I think, okay, it's going to get better. You know, this thing is going to start to level off. and it doesn't. You know, again, this year, phishing complaints were up. The FBI had nearly 250,000 complaints. That's up from about 115,000 the year before. What about you, Roger? I mean, do you think this thing ever starts to level off, or, you know?
Well, I tell you what, I was a writer for InfoWorld and CSO magazines for like 15 years till end of 2019. And for 10 years before that, I was with the InfoWorld Test Center. And every year somebody would say, you know, write an article about how things are going to be next year. And I so essentially the question would be, is it going to be better or worse next year? And every year, no matter how I truly felt, I'd go, I think it's going to be worse next year, only based upon the fact that it was always year after year worse. Like even last year when ransomware was doing being pretty bad, like at the end of 2019, ransomware is taking over city after city, shutting down cities, shutting down school systems, shutting down security companies, shutting down hospitals, police stations, I mean, entire cities. And so I'm sitting at the end of 2019, I'm like, can ransomware get worse? And in my head, I'm like, how could it possibly get worse? And then in 2020, it did. Right. Because they started doing now 70% of ransomware does data exfiltration, and the ransom amounts went up, and the number, the percentage of people paying went up. So is it going to be better or worse in the future? I don't see anything that, could be, but I don't see anything that's, you know, catastrophically different that means that all of a sudden next year is going to be different than the previous years. And let me say, I'm sitting here again going, how could it get worse? I mean, attackers seem to be attacking at will, ransomware at will, you know, data exfiltration at will. And now, you know, we've had major zero days against the Microsoft Exchange platform. We had the SolarWinds supply chain attack that hit U.S. Treasury, Nuclear Regulatory Agency, you know, hundreds of thousands of organizations. And these attackers were in for months to many months without being detected. I would say that, you know, like one of the big things I'm looking at is it looks like the nation state attacks are they're becoming worse than the ransomware attacks because they're just hitting everywhere. And the nation states aren't trying to be secretive. They're hitting tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of organizations. And it's I want to be calm and I want to be this or that, but it does. I don't see that it's going to be better next year.
Well, to that point, somebody at Know Before, Eric Howe or Howes, if I've pronounced that correctly, he wrote a great article the other day, and he was on the other side of a phishing attack, and he dissected this thing. I mean, it was great. You know, he actually got on the phone with them and, you know, scribed the entire experience. So when we talk about phishing, what does, you know, vishing and smishing and farming mean insofar as the numbers? Is that, you know, partly what's driving up those numbers of phishing attacks because the FBI grouped all of that together?
Yeah, you know, certainly our customers and I think just the world in general seeing far more voice-based phishing, which is vishing, or SMS-based messaging phishing is smishing. We are absolutely seeing an acceleration in things beyond email and web. Traditionally, it'd be email, web, social media. I don't think there's a partner I've talked to that hasn't said that they haven't seen an increase in the SMS and vishing voicemail scans. And it used to be, and you still get these things, the car warranties, you know, hey, your car warranty is expiring or your loan's expiring. The Microsoft diatribe of, hey, we're from Microsoft and we've detected a virus on your computer and we're here to help. You know, those were pretty bad, but certainly I think an explosion in the numbers of what's happening there. And let me say, Eric, I talked with Eric about that particular attack. It's phenomenal. I actually, at least probably once a month, I do the same thing. I did that even today for a Facebook attacker that was trying to scam me through a Bitcoin thing. But and it was interesting. I sent the Fisher the link of my story talking about how I had scammed him back. So I enjoyed that. But when I was talking with Eric, both Eric and I have been in the field for decades and following up on malware and attackers. And what we're amazed about is the sheer amount of increase in sophistication. Like what Eric described was that, you know, the first person said, hey, download this thing to your machine, this, you know, this remote control program. And then that attacker installed some bad stuff. And then he said, I'm going to transfer you over to this other person and they'll call you back. And that person called him back and then installed another remote control viewer. And then you got a third one. So we don't know exactly what's going on there. But what we think's happening is that you actually have like this lead gen team So it used to be that these are call centers with hundreds of people in different countries, and it's these people's 9-to-5 job to steal people's money through these telemarketing schemes. But what we were amazed about was, again, that it seemed to be because of these handoffs. It's tougher for the FBI and law enforcement to follow them. But we really, the way that it was scheduled and that they were using different software, like, oh, it's lead gen. So you got the one team that says, hey, we're going to get you this lead and hand it off. Then there's the second guy go, oh, we're going to do this. And then you had the third person that's going to come in with the money or steal the money. And, it's not just one organization anymore. They're not just passing you off to the same call center. And Eric said he could hear the noise volume of the call center, and he could tell when he was being switched because of the noise level to different call centers. But that's what's amazing to me, is that they're becoming big and sophisticated enough to have separate companies doing separate types of functionality to get people to the ultimate place where then their money is stolen. It's pretty wild.
The more I listen to you, the more I read some of the Know Before material, the more I realize how important training, employees and consumers really is. So often you just think about phishing, that it's all about, how to detect a phishing email, but it's so much more than that. Right behind phishing is non-payment and non-delivery of goods, insofar as the number of complaints to IC3. Now, I have a family member who I won't name, who was scammed on Facebook Marketplace and didn't get a new Xbox unit shipped to them. Now, forgetting about what happened and how did they do what they did, at the end of the day, if the consumer knew better, it never would have happened, because they shouldn't have been there and they shouldn't have been involved with that transaction in the first place.
Yeah, for those, and I've had friends as well, they're like, I can't believe this amazing price. And I'm like, yeah, that's clue number one. But because it's in the Facebook Marketplace, it gives us the sense of that it's more trustworthy. And just today, again, I was following this Facebook scammer that was saying if I send him money, he was going to give me 10 times as much tomorrow because he was a Bitcoin miner. So I need only send him $1,000 tomorrow. He sends me $10,000 back. Well, he had fake names, assumed identities, stolen pictures. So I reported to Facebook. I documented, I put it up on my LinkedIn account, a cool article, picture by picture of all the messages in Facebook. But I go to Facebook, this is a fraudulent account. He's using a fraudulent name. He's using fraudulent pictures. Here's who the pictures he had stolen from some Lebanese celebrity. And he's scamming people out of money. About 5 minutes later, I got a message back from Facebook going, does not violate community standards. Thank you so much for reporting it. Not only that, but I'd unfriended the person so they couldn't see my friends. I don't know how they got friended. Facebook friended the guy without me friending them. And then after the report came back that it didn't violate community standards, I noticed that account had now was refriended to me.
Right.
And I'm like, okay. Like this is, and let me say, I'm not against Facebook. I love Facebook, but if somebody using an assumed name and identity stealing money doesn't violate community standards, I guess next time I should say he published a boob or something like that to get the guy banned. What does it take? But you have a lot of people that trust Facebook to be these, the law enforcement of the internet, and it's clearly not happening.
So help us out with extortion. I'm kind of going down the line here of the most popular complaints that came into IC3 last year. There was 76,000 around extortion. Would that be just ransom demands from ransomware infections, or are there other types of extortion?
Yeah, I mean, the vast bulk of it is ransomware demands, but it also can be denial of service attacks where they start attacking a site and they say, pay us $100,000, or we will take your site down. And let me say, that has actually occurred for a long time, and people just pay the money. Like, it's just a cost of doing business and has occurred. It's extortion. Hey, I've taken naked pictures of you, and if you don't pay me, I'm going to release these naked pictures. So it's a combination of everything, led by ransomware, led by, followed by some of these other types, probably denial of service attacks. And again, this is just what they're getting reported to them. They're reporting hundreds of millions of dollars of crime. It's likely, globally, probably in the billions, tremendous amount of money. And again, a lot of it is not getting, a lot of the websites that I have heard about, dealt with, consulted with, they just pay the money, get the pain over. Like, hey, if we go down for a day, we lose $1 million of revenue. This guy's only asking for $100,000 and he leaves us alone for a while. It's like mob money.
Right.
Mob payment protection rackets.
God. So let's talk about personal data breaches, which is completely different than, you know, corporate breaches. So we're not talking about governments and big businesses. We're talking about individuals, consumers. 45,000 people lodged complaints to IC3. And to your point, Roger, who knows what that real number is? 200,000, 500,000. But we're talking about individuals who suffered personal breaches. So what is a personal breach?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's certainly to your personal account, your personal device. Even ransomware people today, one of the most common things they'll do is not only attack the victim company, but then attack the employees and the customers of that company, and they have personal data. You know, like they there was a I think it was in the Netherlands or Norway, where they had breached a mental health facility, and then they got to the personal data records of teenagers or adults that were teenagers in their youth, and the personal file saying, pay us $500, so we're going to release your mental health records and interviews, which I don't think any adult wants their teenage interviews released to the world. You know, and it's also, they broke in and they got my stock credentials. They've got my credit card information, you know, any of the sort of things related to it. But, you know, that probably, you know, it's a lot more than passwords. Tens of millions of devices are having their passwords. It's very common for malware to drop off TrickBot, which collects everybody as many passwords as they can and then upload that. But they're also, again, spending time collecting information, collecting, you know, email addresses and Facebook relationships and, you know, everything they can. And then it's sold on this global marketplace where I can look you up, I can look me up, and we'll have lots of information out there on me. And what's cool, well, I don't know, cool is maybe not the right word, but it's kind of interesting, is they spider through all the information they have on you. So not only do they have your, let's say, login name and password for a couple of websites, but they've linked it to your Facebook account, your Twitter account, your LinkedIn account, to your stock account. So you as the attacker can come in and go, oh, I want to buy this type of information about these people. And you can even target them for income levels. And, you know, it looks suspiciously like a legitimate service that you might be paying, you know, Facebook for to do targeted advertising to. It's pretty amazing stuff that they, you know, the level of sophistication.
So you're starting to get into, you know, the theft of identity, personal identifiable information. And that's another major concern. There were 43,000 complaints that IC3 tracked. That's a jump from about 16,000 the year before. So this thing is trending way up. How serious is identity theft above and beyond login IDs and passwords?
So, you know, it's certainly a serious thing. Although, let me take the counterpoint here. This is probably because this is more surprising to people when I say it than me saying that it's a big deal. Is that, you know, we all get our credit cards and identity stolen usually a couple times every couple of years. If you subscribe to an identity monitoring service, they'll tell you, hey, we found your records out there in the dark web and blah, blah, blah. And what's amazing is that really the credit card industry and some of the other people that hold our data feel like they're doing a fairly good job of protecting our data. I mean, they're not, but they think that the cost to them to deal with the amount that it is, whether it's 4% or 8% of customers in a given year, is minor. Most of the customers aren't going away. Used to be that if you had your identity stolen, it would take you weeks to months, if ever. Like, people would complain, my credit was destroyed and I never got my credit back up. These days, you call somebody, you file this thing, you do this report, it doesn't impact your credit report. Like, it, and, you know, oh, they're usually identifying you before you know your credit card's been compromised. They're sending you the new information. No longer does someone stealing your information, most of the time, that's a big caveat, impact you permanently. They can do things like, you know, a lot of times they'll like file for your taxes in the United States and right. Get a big tax refund. And then you can't file your taxes, and that takes about a year. But in general, what I tell people that's surprising is that when banks and credit card companies and people that hold your information are trying to buy software that protects your information, they actually are spending more time reviewing how not to prevent you from conducting a legitimate transaction. Like, they think that they have the pain that's caused by crime Kind of to an acceptable level of doing business. They're not losing a whole lot of business for it. And the companies that are advertising their services to make the data better are saying, we're doing a better job of making sure that when your customer does a legitimate transaction, that you're not bothering them. You're not sending them a text to verify that the TV they're buying at Walmart is okay. So that's what I think what's amazing to me is the vast majority of artificial intelligence and things like that is not being done to try to stop your information from being stolen or misused. It's actually being done to make sure that you can use your information legitimately, because if you can't use your credit card or you don't have your credit's not right from FICO or whoever, then less likely you and other people are to use that information. So that's kind of interesting to me, is that there is not this huge consortium working harder to protect your information better. They're actually, that they kind of feel like they have taken care of, and they're worried about losing you as a customer because they accidentally stop you from doing something legitimate. And that just blows my mind, because crime's so bad, identity theft is so bad, but they are not working as hard to prevent it as you think.
So you read through the report, and you know, you just have to be disappointed in you know, parts of humanity, you know, the cyber criminals who do what they do. But there's one statistic that jumped out at me, Roger, and I'm disappointed in business owners. I'm disappointed in, you know, CEOs, because they're not protecting their companies from the business email compromise. I mean, we have been shouting this thing out for years, and there's just way too many companies. You know, the FBI had about 20,000 complaints. Again, the number's probably a lot higher than that. Billions of dollars are being lost. And this is one where you know all too well that companies can be trained. You know, you need to sit down with your people, and they have to understand this threat. If they don't, they're going to be complaining to IC3.
Yeah. The business email compromise is, you know, I think what we saw, at least anecdotally in the newspapers, was a whole lot more $1 million and $3 million taken, you know, and a lot of times they weren't getting that money back, and it wasn't covered by their cyber and security insurance policies. And we know for sure that if you train people and your employees to recognize phishing scams, business email compromise scams, if you just do, and you've got to do repetitive training at least once a month, we know for sure that it will reduce the percentage of employees that will click or be tricked from about 38% on average to under 5% in less than a year. It's a significant risk reduction. And let me say, like, you got to stay on top of the trends, not only COVID, but we're seeing a lot of third-party phishing, because there's so much third-party phishing. Trusted third-party phishing is when one of your vendors or people you work with has been compromised, and the attacker is sending email from their servers or from their workstations to you. So it's a phishing scam coming to you from an email address you recognize, from a person you do business with, usually with a subject heading that you've used. And then they're asking you to do something. And so because that's increasing significantly, you know, you'll see a lot of guidance going, hey, if you get an unexpected email from a strange email address, we're like, no, it's an unexpected email, even from somebody you know and trust, asking you to do something new they've never asked you to do before, that could be potentially dangerous to you or your company. So you have to keep, you know, you have to keep up on the trends, and, you know, you've got to tell people there's a lot of COVID, you know, phishing out there. And more than just saying there's a lot of COVID phishing, then do simulated phishing tests with COVID related themes to see, did they really take that in? Because I'll tell you, I was actually a victim of a fake COVID or is a simulated phishing attack. I think I'm about as savvy as I can be. Our CEO told us, you know, watch out for these COVID phishing things. We got training. And then there was this email from HR going, hey, you'll be allowed back in the office soon because you're going to get a vaccination. You know, so click here when you think you'll be ready. And I knew vaccinations were off 6 months. I was like, what are they talking about? And I clicked. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, oh, my gosh, it was, you know, it was a simulated phishing. And then I felt relieved. I felt relieved because I'm like, you know what? I did get spoofed, but it reinforced to me that I can be phished, number one. And number two, if I'm appropriately motivated, I can be phished easier. And it has made me stop, think, and slow down on every COVID email and HR request that I get. So training really does work, and even works for people like me, old dogs like me.
Well, Nobifor is a fun place to work. We filmed a documentary, so we know a lot about that. I got to ask you, is this thing trending now? Like, you know, Roger got fished. Does everybody know?
I wrote about it, and I got to tell you, it was a big blow to my ego because I believed I was unfishable. And let me say, I can fish anyone, but I thought I was unfishable. And then to fall prey to something easy, and I'm like, why did I do it? And it had the signs that you would normally see with a fish. It was, it said HR department. We don't call our HR department HR department. It, you know, but my mind just saw this. I was like, how can they dare think that I'm going to get a vaccine right now? They're crazy, you know. And and that's what hackers are trying to do. That's what the fishers are trying to do. Is if they can motivate you, with anger or a negative thing, that more people are motivated by something that makes them a little angry than something that makes them a little happy. That's human nature, and that's what hackers prey on. And that's right. I learned I'm fallible.
Well, I guess that's what the hackers are thinking. And, you know, I'm sure they kid each other. You know, if there's an oldie but goodie, then it's tech support fraud because this thing's still working too. And they know exactly who to go after. You know, in the FBI report, the IC3 indicated that I think it was over 60% of victims of tech support fraud are over 60 years old. And it's interesting. So I guess they're now, you know, starting to really target this demographic.
Yeah. And let me say that, you know, another thing me and Eric House talked about was that they were so ready for any questions that you might ask them, like you try to throw them off their game and, you know, they've got their tech support call sheet and know how to respond and what to say. And it's become such a big industry that there's a Netflix show. I forget the name, but there's a show on Netflix about, I think it's an Indian call center that does tech support fraud or something like that. But I'm like, you know, it's gone mainstream when it's a Netflix series, you know, about it and targeting old people. Yeah, absolutely. I personally think that like when we catch a fisher or a hacker that fishes old people, it's probably not good of me to say, but I think we should be able to punch them in the nose. We should be able to grab a random old person, say, take a swing, give them a good bop in the nose before we put them in jail, because that's a special place of unethicalness to take older people's money, you know, that are in, you know, trying don't have usually have limited means in the first place, and it's sad.
Right. So I saved the worst for last, Roger. You know, and it's ransomware. You touched on it a little bit earlier. Forgetting about the statistics, I want to ask you about something that the industry has been talking about for years. And I think when people like you and I talk about it, it's different than when a victim is having a conversation and they've actually been attacked. Do you pay the ransom or don't you pay the ransom?
So I'll start by saying that most of the victims are probably paying the ransom. And I used to be cavalier and go, you know, hey, you know, most people are paying it. You should pay it, you know, if you think. It's a business decision, number one, but there are serious legal consequences. Certainly in the U.S., the Treasury Department last year said if you give money to somebody that's on the prohibited list and terrorist watch list, you could be liable. So what I will tell you for sure is that IT people like us shouldn't be making the decision. It should be senior management and lawyers that are, you know, that understand the consequence. I don't know anybody any victim that's paid the ransom that was purely just a victim that paid the ransom that later got charged. But, you know, when the U.S. Treasury puts out a memo saying, hey, be careful of this, there's probably going to be somebody that gives no consideration of that legal consequence, and they're going to be the first person. One day I'll be going, hey, I now know of somebody that was charged for paying the ransom. So it's a business decision. It's got to be made by senior management and legal. Let me say, most lawyers aren't familiar with the legal issues around it. So they either need to come up with that to speed on that or consult with a legal firm that will help, because you really need to make that decision ahead of time, right? It's one thing not to pay the ransom because you've got a good backup. It's another when they've got your data and your customers' data and your employees' data. And you don't want to be making the decision, are we going to pay in that case on the fly when it's happening? That's not the time to be making the decision, are we going to pay or not going to pay? Because your lawyers can't come up on a dime on that. So everybody needs to do the research and preparation ahead of time.
Where does that leave the small company, though? I mean, they don't really have, you know, lawyers at their disposal. You know, they'll reach out if they have to. A lot of them don't have an IT staff. So, you know, what about a small insurer? You know, maybe they have thousands of customers, but not millions of customers. You know, they're on the small side. They get hit with ransomware. Where do they turn? What do they do? And how much time do they really have?
Yeah, I think even when you're small, you need to turn to an experienced ransomware responder. And those people are going to know the considerations and know the situation and be able to help you to avoid the red flags. So when you get hit by ransomware, it's not the time to be taking on somebody new or someone that's done it. The ransomware incident responders that I talk to have done thousands of incident responses to ransomware. They kind of know how it's done, what can be done, and they can assist those small firms with either making that decision or getting with lawyers that can help them make that decision. But let me say for sure that you don't want to be choosing somebody new. And another thing I see with the smaller firms is they're less likely to shut down the holes that allowed the ransomware in the first place. Ransomware typically comes in because of unpatched software, social engineering, but the smaller firms don't tend to really spend a lot of time figuring out how it got in. So they either pay or don't pay the ransom, but then they get hit again a month or two later. And the second time is always worse. And sometimes there's a third time it's even worse. So I would tell smaller firms, you've got to make sure that you close the holes of how ransomware got in there in the first place. And it's usually social engineering. And because if you don't, they're just going to be back.
Right. Well, Roger, before we let you go, any, you know, words of advice, words of wisdom for consumers and businesses in 2021? I mean, you know, just water this thing down, keep it simple. You know, what should companies be doing to protect themselves and their employees?
I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that better education is the number one thing. That you tell people, if you get an unexpected email, even if it's from somebody you know and trust, asking you to do something for the first time that you've never been asked by that person to do, that could potentially harm you or your company, that you want to stop, think, and listen before you do it. And really, that needs, you need to drive that not only in education, but the simulated phishing. There is, I've been doing this 34 years, now 35 years, you know, earned all these gray hairs. There's no doubt in my mind that the number one problem is a lack of appropriate education. And that fundamental misalignment is what's allowing ransomware and identity theft and all of these things to be so bad. It's all about education.
Well, Roger, really appreciate you coming on today. The FBI does a great job putting their report out. It's not easy. And, you know, you're a wealth of information. And I think this is going to help a lot of people. So thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be back on the show.
I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining us today was Roger Grimes, data-driven defense evangelist for KnowBefore, the world's first and largest new school security awareness training and simulated phishing platform that helps you manage the ongoing problem of social engineering. To learn more about KnowBefore, visit KnowBefore.com. You can keep up with all of our media at CybercrimeMagazine.com.